24-year-old Kyle Fleischman was a recent graduate of Elon University. He landed a new job with a bright future, went in with a few roommates on a condo, and had his entire life ahead of him. His family was rocked when his mother was diagnosed with cancer, but they all stepped up for her. Kyle vowed to his mother that they would beat the cancer together and that he would be there for her every step of the way. In the days before her first surgery, in an attempt to raise her spirits, on November 8, 2007, Kyle arranged for his mother, sister, and best friend to accompany him to a Dane Cook comedy show. The show would take place in their hometown of Charlotte, North Carolina. None of them knew this would be the last night that they would ever see Kyle. After the show, Kyle and his best friend, Daniel Scagnelli, decided to go to a local sports bar, the Buckhead Saloon, while his mother and sister went home for the night. After a few hours, Scagnelli felt tired and asked Kyle if he was ready to go, but Kyle was chatting up a woman and decided to hang out a little longer. Surveillance cameras show Kyle exiting the bar shortly after 2 a.m., and the final footage shot from a local business shows Kyle walking down the street towards a pizzeria. Outside of a cashier at the pizzeria and a cab driver, none of the cameras in the city of Charlotte nor any other witnesses see him again that night. Kyle left behind his debit card and his coat and wandered out into the clear cold of a 30-degree North Carolina night. Between 2:20 a.m. and 3:28 a.m., Kyle makes a series of phone calls to businesses, friends, and family, but leaves no messages. Were these calls made to look for a ride, or was Kyle signaling that he was in trouble? The pings from his phone place him in a bad area of town, one which someone who grew up in Charlotte would know to avoid. The next morning, Kyle is reported missing when neither his best friend nor his family can locate him. His roommates report that he never returned home from the night before, and his car is still sitting in Daniel Scagnelli's driveway. A massive search is launched, but despite hundreds of volunteers and thousands of supporters on social media, no leads on Kyle come to the surface. A team of tracking dogs follow Kyle's scent from the Buckhead Saloon to a local park known to be frequented by drug dealers and members of the vicious MS-13 gang. Kyle's scent traverses the park and ends at a nearby construction site full of freshly overturned dirt. Despite exhaustive efforts and the utilization of cadaver dogs, no trace of Kyle is found. In what has come to be described as one of the most well-publicized disappearances in the history of North Carolina, there is a stark lack of information. Contradictory facts, myths, and speculation become mixed with verifiable evidence, creating a confusing chaos of hard-to-believe information. That, coupled with unusually tight-lipped police, only add to the web of misinformation, leaving Kyle's friends and family wondering what happened to him and why no answers can be found. In the nearly 10 years since Kyle walked into the darkness of Charlotte, many theories have been purported. Was Kyle killed in a hit-and-run accident? Did he go to the park to purchase drugs and became a victim of violence? Did Kyle choose to walk away from his new life? Or was Kyle the victim of a robbery gone bad? This is Trace Evidence, Episode 13, The Vanishing of Kyle Fleischman. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Today's episode focuses on the mysterious disappearance of 24-year-old Kyle Fleischman from the streets of Charlotte, North Carolina. It was recommended by listener Brian Klein, so thank you for the suggestion, Brian. Before we move into the case, just a few notes about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focused on missing persons and unsolved murders. We are available across multiple platforms and on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and many more. Trace Evidence has a Patreon page for those of you who wish to support the podcast. It can be found at patreon.com/traceevidence. This podcast is a complete one-man operation, so if you enjoy it and wish to help support it, please check out the Patreon page. Links, information, and more items, including YouTube videos and full episode transcripts, can be found on our official website at trace-evidence.com. If you'd like to contact me, you can email me at traceevidencepod@gmail.com, tweet me at traceevpod, That's TRACEEVPOD, or join the Facebook discussion group simply by searching for Trace Evidence Podcast or clicking the direct link on our website. If you have questions, comments, or case suggestions, I'd really love to hear from you. If you enjoy the show, please rate and review us on whatever app or platform you're listening on. The more ratings and reviews we get, the easier it becomes to find the podcast and the more attention can be given to these cases. Today, we examine the mysterious disappearance of Kyle Fleischman. This is a case I've heard a lot about ever since I moved to North Carolina, and one which has always fascinated me. It's extremely frustrating considering all the false information surrounding it, and many people don't know the difference between the facts and the fiction. Today, we're going to clear all that up and tell the full story. This is episode 13, The Vanishing of Kyle Fleischman. Kyle Fleischman had grown up in Charlotte, North Carolina. When he was just a boy, the family moved to the city for his father Dick's job with Fidelity Investments. He was intelligent, sincere, and described by friends and family as a kind and compassionate man with a big heart and an interest in helping others. He attended Charlotte Catholic High School, graduating in 2002, and would go on to Elon University, where he studied business administration and management, and served as an officer in the Kappa Alpha Order fraternity. The official website for the Kappa Alpha Order describes the fraternity as seeking to, quote, create a lifetime experience which centers on reverence to God, duty, honor, character, and gentlemanly conduct, end quote. Kyle is a Caucasian male standing at 6 feet tall, weighing approximately 180 pounds, with brown hair and green eyes. During his time at Elon University, Kyle busied himself with his studies, but always made time for volunteerism. According to friends from Elon, Kyle volunteered to assist in the Special Olympics, the Boys and Girls Club, and Safe Rides, an organization at Elon which provides free late-night transportation within a one-mile radius of the campus in order to prevent driving under the influence, as well as to ensure safety and security for all students. All around, Kyle is defined as a good guy, someone you could depend on, and who was always available to help. He was socially inclined, never too shy to meet new people. Friends say that Kyle had many friends, no girlfriend, and as far as anyone else knew, no enemies either. Following his graduation from Elon, Kyle moved back to his parents' home in Charlotte, but his stay there wouldn't be prolonged. He was hired to work as a healthcare recruiter at Maxim Healthcare Services in Charlotte, and in the fall of 2007, he moved into a condo on the south side of Charlotte with two roommates. In terms of the city itself, Charlotte is often referred to in terms of north and south. Like most cities, there are good areas of Charlotte, and there are areas people tend to avoid. While the south is the more affluent and tourist-friendly area, North Charlotte is often described as having a higher crime rate and not a place where you want to be wandering around by yourself in the middle of the night. Kyle's family was extremely proud of his accomplishments and looking forward to seeing where his new career would take him. The family was suddenly struck a devastating blow when, in the fall of 2007, Kyle's mother Barbara was diagnosed with cancer. Kyle was reported to be extremely close to his mother, and his father, Dick, has stated on multiple occasions that Kyle was there for Barbara and promised her that they were going to do everything together and that she was going to beat the cancer. Just a few days before her first surgery is to take place, Kyle makes plans to take Barbara, his sister Noelle, and his best friend Daniel Scagnelli to a Dane Cook comedy show at Bobcat Stadium, the Spectrum Center, located in the city center of Charlotte. The comedy show would take place on November 8, 2007. Kyle drove over to Scagnelli's home, where he would leave his car for the night. The group would take a taxi to the show, knowing that there would be some drinking involved, and they didn't want to have to leave a vehicle behind in the city. The group attended the show and had a good time. Kyle's described as being in a very upbeat mood following the show. Afterwards, Barbara and Noelle would head home. Barbara thanked her son for the night out and said goodbye. She could never have imagined that this would be the last time she would ever see her son. Kyle and Scagnelli decided to continue their night at the Buckhead Saloon, a sports bar located on East 5th Street in Uptown Charlotte, reportedly just under 3 miles from Kyle's new condo. The Buckhead Saloon has since closed, and a review on Yelp referred to the bar as, quote, having peanut shells on the floor and deer heads on the walls, where the guys tend to be jerks and the girls tend to be embarrassingly trashed, end quote. Most reviews seem to be consistent with this assessment. Kyle and Scagnelli arrive at the Buckhead around 11 p.m. During their time at the bar, Kyle and Scagnelli share several drinks. Of Kyle's condition at the time, Scagnelli would state, quote, Kyle wasn't extremely intoxicated by any means. I'm sure he was feeling pretty good. I know I was. But I don't think he'd reached the point where he wasn't aware of his surroundings. End quote. As 1 a.m. is quickly approaching, Scagnelli decides it's time to go and decides to head home. According to Scagnelli, he asks Kyle, quote, you coming or you staying? End quote. But Kyle is talking to a few people and tells Scagnelli that he's going to stick around for a little bit longer and he'll get in touch with him the next day. Scagnelli hails a cab and goes home for the night. This will be the last time he ever sees Kyle. It is now in the early morning hours of Friday, November 8th, 2007. Reports of the time differ, but Kyle is said at this time to be talking to either one or three separate women. Some have speculated that Kyle may have been talking to a small group of women, but as the evening went on, his attention focused specifically on one. Security camera footage from the bar shows Kyle dancing with a woman that night, and there's reportedly an altercation which takes place between Kyle and that woman's boyfriend and his two friends. The video is somewhat open to interpretation, as nothing physical takes place, but there does appear to be a short conversation between Kyle and the boyfriend. A private investigator later hired by the family states, quote, there was some videotape we were able to gather from the manager of the Buckhead Saloon, showing Kyle first speaking with the young lady and then the two guys. In the footage, it looks like they were in a possible argument or confrontation with Kyle, end quote. Shortly after this incident, surveillance footage shows Kyle exiting the bar at approximately 2:20 a.m. In the moments before Kyle leaves, he places a call to his sister's cell phone at approximately 2:19, but doesn't leave a message. Kyle forgets his jacket and debit card behind at the bar, which many use to suggest his level of intoxication at the time that he leaves. The private investigator alleges that following his exit from the bar, Kyle sees the young woman again and engages her in conversation as the two cross the street. The investigator indicates that he doesn't believe Kyle left his things behind as a result of drunkenness, but out of a desire to exit the establishment quickly. Whether that was to catch up with the woman or to avoid another altercation is a matter of pure speculation. Having exited the bar, Kyle is now on College Street. Several minutes later, Kyle would be caught on surveillance camera one last time. He is seen walking down College Street towards a pizza shop. It should be noted that the temperature that night is reported to be around 30 degrees Fahrenheit, and Kyle is without his coat. The camera footage shows Kyle moving from right to left, wearing a long white sleeve shirt and blue jeans. He doesn't appear to be stumbling or having any difficulty, which others suggest points to him not being quite as drunk as others have stated. There is a large discrepancy online, which purports false facts that Kyle rode away on a bike that night. It's unknown where this alleged bike came from, since Kyle took a taxi to the city with his friends and family, and no surveillance footage exists of him on a bike. Strangely, this is frequently reported, but according to all official sources, Kyle was not on a bike. Some people have used the bike argument to say that Kyle couldn't have been very drunk if he was able to ride his bike several blocks without incident, and whether that's true or not, it really doesn't seem to matter, since there's no evidence that Kyle had access to any bikes that night. There have also been reports that Kyle got into a cab that night, but again, there appears to be no official verification of this claim. Kyle stops in at Fuel Pizza, just out of the view of the camera, within minutes of exiting the Buckhead Saloon. According to a cashier at the pizzeria, Kyle entered without a coat on and ordered 2 extreme slices of pizza, which have everything on them. The cashier stated, quote, he came in alone. Normally not many people come in alone. But I took his order, I put his order in. I rang him up, and he went to the bathroom, end quote. Kyle's father says that he frequently ordered his pizza in extreme style and later stated, quote, As soon as he told my investigator that Kyle had a pizza with everything on it, I knew it was him. End quote. The cashier loses track of Kyle after this, saying that the restaurant became very busy as local bars were closing and late-night customers were coming in to grab a slice. At some point during the rush, Kyle exits the pizzeria without anyone else noticing. No cameras throughout the city of Charlotte catch another glimpse of Kyle. A strange series of phone calls are made from Kyle's phone over the next period of time. At 2:42 a.m., Kyle makes a 10-second phone call to a local business that he'd visited earlier in the day, and then immediately hangs up and dials his voicemail. Between 2:43 and 2:57, Kyle calls his father's office number 3 to 4 times, but receives no answer. At approximately 3:25 a.m., a cab driver claims to have seen Kyle walking. According to the driver, he spotted Kyle in an area known as NoDa, which is short for North Davidson. College Street, which Kyle was walking on, becomes North Davidson Street as you continue down it. The driver would state that he saw, quote, a kid with no jacket who was not in the right place and looked to be intoxicated, end quote. The private investigator who spoke to the cab driver relayed his information, stating, quote, the cab driver said he recalled seeing a white male that looked similar to the description we were putting out on Kyle Fleischman. He told us he was traveling outbound on North Davidson Street, approaching the 1100 block, approaching the railroad tracks near Hunter Wrecker Service. He knew enough about the area that he gave specific details, end quote. Several minutes after this reported sighting, at 3:28 a.m., Kyle places a phone call to Daniel Scagnelli, his best friend with whom he spent the earlier part of the evening. The phone call lasts a total of 4 seconds, and Kyle leaves no message. Less than 60 seconds later, at 3:29 a.m., Kyle places a call to one of his roommates, Bruce Modern. But this call only lasts for 6 seconds, and again, Kyle leaves no message. According to all reports, by 4 a.m., Kyle's phone has died, and there's no more activity on it. The reason for his calls have been the subject of a lot of speculation, with some believing that Kyle was in trouble and was calling for help. Some think that Kyle may have simply been trying to get a ride, while others think it's possible that the calls may have not been made by Kyle at all. The next morning, Daniel Scagnelli awakens to find a missed call from Kyle. He calls back, but it goes straight to voicemail. He doesn't think too much of the missed call and figures Kyle is sleeping the late night off. As the day progresses, though, Scagnelli begins growing concerned. He hasn't heard from Kyle since he saw him the previous night, and Kyle's car is still parked in his driveway. He places a call to one of Kyle's roommates to ask if he is there, but he's quickly informed that Kyle never returned from his outing the previous night. Scagnelli decides to call Kyle's parents, and when they note that they also have missed calls from him but have been unable to get in touch with him, the decision is made to call the police and report him as missing. In the hours following notification of the police, they begin investigating in the areas surrounding the Buckhead Saloon, looking for any signs of Kyle. Scagnelli created a Facebook page reporting Kyle as missing, and within 24 hours the page had over 60,000 people following for updates. Several of Kyle's friends made an appearance on the Today Show, discussing the case, and putting out the word about Kyle's disappearance. Kyle's sister Noelle also made an appearance on Fox News. Police conducted a massive foot search of the area, but were unable to discover any signs of Kyle. During the course of their investigation, they looked into his cell phone records and began the process of pinging the location from where the calls were made. Police have not officially released the record of these pings, though Kyle's father, Dick, has since stated that a ping of the phone at approximately 3:28 a.m. places Kyle in the NoDa area where the cab driver had previously reported sighting him. Dick Fleischman stated, quote, the cab driver couldn't 100% identify him, but my feeling is that the guy made a comment of compassion and was worried about somebody, which means he saw him pretty good. He saw a kid with no jacket, a kid he felt was not in the right place. He did say he was intoxicated, and the time of day he said he saw him was exactly when Kyle's cell phone was going off in that area. So I believe he saw him, absolutely. End quote. On Saturday, November 17th, firefighters and nearly 300 volunteers, including Kyle's friends and family, conducted a large search spinning out in a wide 9-mile area around Charlotte. Flyers were handed out with Kyle's picture on them, and search dogs were brought in by the family and led by Linda Dunn and Mike Craig from Public Safety Dogs Incorporated. The jacket Kyle had left behind in the bar was used to give his scent to the dogs, who almost immediately began following his trail. The dogs followed Kyle's scent down College Street, past the final surveillance camera that spotted him. Outside of the pizzeria, two dogs walked in a small circle before continuing on. Linda Dunn has said that the circular loop that the dogs walked in is usually an indicator that the missing person may have, quote, been looking for something or trying to hide, end quote. The path continued down College Street as it turns into North Davidson Street, leading to a small bridge which connects to Cordelia Park, located just shy of 2 miles from the Buckhead Saloon. Cordelia Park is a 24-acre park which sits in North Charlotte in the Villa Heights neighborhood of North Davidson Street. It has several walking trails, playgrounds, picnic areas, swimming pools, and a full basketball court. While during the day, the park is well-traveled and populated, at night it becomes the hangout of a rougher crowd and is known to be frequented by drug dealers and gang members. The park connects to the main streets of Charlotte via 17th Street Bridge, which traverses the Little Sugar Creek. It is considered to be an unsafe area at night, especially when alone. Kyle, having grown up in Charlotte, is well aware of the reputation it carries, and his family has said he would never willingly enter that area alone at night. The handlers of the search dogs, Mike and Linda, walked across the small bridge leading to Cordelia Park, but had to call their search off. They saw several suspicious characters in the park, and it was growing later, with the sun going down. The park was known to be frequented by members of MS-13. MS-13, or formerly known as Mara Salvatrucha, is a large gang that originated in El Salvador, and began spreading throughout the United States, Mexico, and South America in the 1980s. In America alone, it has been reported to have as many as 40,000 members involved in activities such as racketeering, sex trafficking, extortion, child prostitution, drug trafficking, and murder. The gang has over 70,000 members worldwide and is feared everywhere they choose to invade. In 2012, the Obama administration listed MS-13 as not a gang, but as an international criminal organization. Concerned about their safety, Linda and Mike call off the search until the next morning. On their way out of the park, Mike Craig meets a homeless man who engages him in conversation. According to Mike, the homeless man was very open with him, as opposed to the police who had previously been in the area canvassing for information. Mike has stated that the homeless man told him, quote, Kyle had been killed over at the park, but he did not know where his body had been taken to, end quote. The next day, the dog team returned, beginning the search at the edge of Cordelia Park. The dog followed Kyle's scent to the park, and eventually to a nearby construction site located at 16th Street and North Davidson, just 200 yards from Cordelia Park. According to Linda Dunn, when she arrived at the construction site, they were immediately struck by what she referred to as, quote, the scent of death, end quote. They felt this site was a likely location for the possible disposal of Kyle's body. They were just beginning the construction of a new apartment complex, and the dirt was all overturned and fresh. Dunn would state, quote, I ran all over this huge lot like a crazy person trying to locate the source of that odor, because I knew something was dead, end quote. In relation to the construction site, Mike stated, quote, if he had been killed over there, burying him over here would have been very easy, end quote. Linda and the dog searched the construction area, digging through piles of dirt in hopes of finding some trace of Kyle, but their efforts were fruitless. Frustrated and tired, Linda had to call off the search for that day. Linda said, quote, this place is going to haunt me for a really long time, end quote. Linda and Mike both believe that Kyle is either buried at the site or had been buried there at some point in time. As a result of their search efforts, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department went to the construction site and conducted their own search. They brought in cadaver dogs and employed ground-penetrating radar and poking sticks, searching every pile of fresh dirt. Within a few months of Kyle's disappearance, the developers moved forward with their project and constructed a new apartment complex over the site, eliminating any possible evidence that could be there. In the years following Kyle's disappearance, private investigators have managed to find a few witnesses, but little else. The cab driver who alleges to have seen Kyle walking that night, as well as the cashier at Fuel Pizza, were both initially found and questioned by a private investigator. Police subsequently followed up on these leads, but strangely, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg police have been extremely tight-lipped in regard to the disappearance of Kyle Fleischman. Kyle's family has grown frustrated with the lack of developments, and feel that the answers are out there, but that those who know them aren't coming forward. Kyle's father, Dick, stated in an interview, quote, "I find it hard to believe that nothing to this day has ever come forward with anything about my son. We feel very strongly this is a local issue, and the people who know what happened to him are still in town. I really believe if we ever find out anything, it's going to be because of a local and not a national report." End quote. In response to Kyle's disappearance, several social media attempts were made to gain tips and information. A website was made, helpfindkyle.com, but as of this recording, it is no longer active. The original Facebook page still exists, but is somewhat inactive and all contact links connected to it are no longer usable. I did request to join the group, but as of yet have not been approved. A foundation was made in Kyle's honor to help others who were unsure of what to do in the critical first few days when someone goes missing. The foundation was hosted at the website kff.org, but this site also no longer exists. In the nearly 10 years since Kyle vanished, police have said they still receive tips, but that they are fewer and fewer each year. Sadly, in the time that has passed, the Fleischman family have become more convinced that it is unlikely they will ever see Kyle alive again. In an interview, Kyle's father stated, quote, "I think somebody probably tried to rob him, and it unfortunately got out of hand, and they probably took his life." End quote. His mother Barbara has referred to the disappearance as likely the result of, quote, "Kyle being the victim of opportunity, a crime of opportunity," end quote. When asked about locating Kyle, his best friend Daniel Scagnelli stated, quote, "Who knows what? I'm not sure. But I think we lost Kyle that night." The hardest thing to stomach with this is the unknown. When you've lost someone, you want to mourn them. You want to be able to move on and have that closure. And we don't have that today. End quote. In 2010, 3 years after Kyle vanished, his parents moved out of Charlotte, first to Hilton Head, South Carolina, and finally to Florida, where they currently reside. Barbara had joined a group in Charlotte known as Kindermourn. It's a nonprofit organization which brings together grieving families through support groups and counseling. Since leaving Charlotte, she remains in contact with many of the families she grew close to while attending Kindermourn programs. Despite this, they remain ever vigilant for information regarding Kyle, and although Barbara has stated that Charlotte was her home and she thinks well of the city, Dick doesn't share her sentiments. When asked about the city, Dick responded, quote, "When someone says Charlotte, I get a sick feeling," end quote. Several theories have been developed in the years since Kyle Fleischman walked into the darkness of Charlotte and was never seen again. As is often the case with adult disappearances, police have suggested that it's entirely possible that Kyle simply chose to walk away. It has been rumored that the police were not as devoted to the investigation initially as they should have been, citing that this was a 24-year-old man who had been drinking and may have made the choice to travel elsewhere. It's believed in many circles regarding this case that the Charlotte-Mecklenburg police considered this case to be a low priority because of Kyle's age and because of a lack of evidence that a crime actually took place. Some have theorized that Kyle's disappearance was linked to other disappearances. They have cited the case of Max Walker. Walker mysteriously disappeared after a night at the Buckhead Saloon in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Very similarly to Kyle's case, Max was last seen by a friend at 1:45 a.m. just outside of the Buckhead, and security camera footage captured him exiting, and he is reported to have been extremely intoxicated. Max was reported missing the following afternoon when a coworker noted that he never returned to his hotel room since the previous night. Sadly, his body was recovered in the Milwaukee River the next day. His death was ultimately ruled to be the result of an accidental drowning when no signs of trauma or foul play could be discerned. Another case drawing parallels to Kyle's was that of Justin Gaines, who vanished from outside of Wild Bill's nightclub in Duluth, Georgia, just a week prior to Kyle's disappearance. A career criminal would later say that he and a friend shot and killed Justin, disposing of his body, though it has never been recovered. Although these cases show odd coincidences, They appear to share no link to the disappearance of Kyle Fleischman, but people find the coincidences hard to ignore. The most common theory in the disappearance of Kyle Fleischman is that he became the victim of a random act of violence, whether done by one or more individuals. The theory suggests that Kyle, somewhat drunk and wandering into a bad area of Charlotte, came across one or more persons who had the intention of robbing him. Kyle had left his debit card behind at the Buckhead that night, and it has been reported that he had his wallet on him when he vanished, but that it only contained $6. The theory follows one of two separate lines of thought. Either Kyle ran into a person or persons who intended to rob him, they discovered that he didn't have much on him and decided to murder him for reasons unknown, or that Kyle ran into members of MS-13, who saw him as an easy target that night. Either way, whether murder was the intention or not, it's believed that Kyle was murdered and his body was disposed of. In terms of the disposal, if indeed he were in the area of Cordelia Park, that places him not too far from the fresh construction site where both investigators and search dog team leaders believed it would be extremely easy to bury a body. Some have even argued that the phone calls made from Kyle's phone were not placed by Kyle, but by someone who had taken his phone in a robbery. Some believe that Kyle may have been the victim of a hit and run. Under this belief, it's theorized that Kyle, drunk and walking down the street, may have stumbled into oncoming traffic or perhaps been victimized by a drunk driver. In a panic, the driver stops and puts Kyle's body into the car, or perhaps even the trunk, and disposes of him in any number of desolate areas in the surrounding landscape of North Carolina. Whether or not investigators checked city cameras for suspicious vehicles in the area at the time is unknown, though it seems likely that this would be part of a routine investigation. The final theory that has come up in this case is that Kyle was murdered during a drug deal gone bad. As I reported earlier, Cordelia Park was known to be a bad area frequented by gang members and drug dealers. Kyle had grown up in Charlotte and knew the area well. Well enough to know what goes on in Cordelia Park after the sun goes down. Some have suggested that Kyle walked to Cordelia Park to score some drugs. Though Kyle was not known to be a drug user by any accounts, people often leave marijuana off this list. When describing whether or not someone uses drugs, people tend to think of crack, cocaine, and heroin. Marijuana at this particular time in history is considered by many to be something a lot of people do, and they don't consider it a drug. The proponents of this theory put forward the idea that Kyle used marijuana from time to time and had possibly gone to the park to make a purchase. If Kyle had only $6 in his wallet, this is an unlikely possibility. But that all depends on the level of intoxication he was under at the time. It's a thin theory, but in a case where there are no answers, it's as much of a theory as anything else. The disappearance of Kyle Fleischman is one of those tragic stories that happens too frequently. A young man with his whole life ahead of him goes out for a night of fun and disappears forever. Witnesses spot him in the moments before he vanishes. Footage from security cameras show haunting video of his last moments. Despite a large search, an outpouring of social media attention and media coverage, little is found, and all leads result in dead ends. It has been nearly 10 years since Kyle vanished, and for his friends and family, the lack of answers only makes each day harder. His parents have since moved away, unable to walk the streets of Charlotte each day, never knowing if the random people they pass in the street might know exactly what happened to their son. His best friend Daniel Scagnelli operated the Facebook group as well as several websites, but in the years since, seems to have withdrawn from the tragedy and tried to push forward with his life. In a case riddled with rumor, speculation, and contradictions, the answers may never present themselves. The case is certainly solvable, but until a new piece of evidence can be found, or someone comes forward who has the answers, the disappearance of Kyle Fleischman remains a disturbing example of how easily someone could disappear without a trace. The disappearance of Kyle Fleischman is one of those sad stories that can haunt you if you get caught up in it. I find myself, late at night, just wondering what happened here and why nothing's ever been found to provide any answers. When a 24-year-old man graduates from college, has a career path lined up, moves into his first home outside of the family house, and seems to have it all, you don't ever expect that to just disappear overnight. Tragic things happen every day. People are murdered, have accidents, and leave this world before their time. The difference is, in those cases, we have answers. And whether or not we think it's fair or heartbreaking, we have the ability to grieve, to mourn, to say goodbye. Kyle's friends and family have never had that chance, and that's incredibly horrifying. To not know what happened to your son, to your brother, to your best friend, is a terrible fate that I wouldn't wish on anyone. This case has been on my list for a while now. I wasn't originally planning to touch on it yet, since I'd recently done the Aisha Degree case, which also takes place in North Carolina, and I like to spread the cases out more in terms of location. I received an email from a listener named Brian Klein. He had a friend who knew about Kyle's disappearance and lived in the Charlotte area. He told me that the case has always bothered him, and he expressed his sympathy for Kyle's family and friends. I felt that if I were going to do this case, then this was a good time to do it. So thank you, Brian, for suggesting it to me and giving me the extra push to get going. Kyle grew up in Charlotte. It was a city he knew well. He knew which places were safe and which places to avoid. He certainly knew that when he went to the Buckhead Saloon that night, that he was less than 3 miles from the condo he was moving into. So how does someone so well informed of his surroundings end up wandering towards a location he knows is dangerous and should be avoided? That's one of the key questions whose answer might be able to shine a new light into the void of this case. It's also a question that everyone who has ever looked at this case has asked himself eventually. Kyle's case reminds me of two others I've covered in the past, Lauren Speer and Jesse Ross. In both of these cases, you have two people who just vanish into nothing and nobody seems to have any answers. In all three of these cases, the missing person is captured on surveillance camera in the moments before they vanish. In Lauren's case, there appears to be a connection to a man convicted of murder who stalked the street she was walking that night. In Jesse's, the police believe he fell victim to a river that has taken many others before. In the case of Kyle Fleischman, we simply don't know. His disappearance is mired in speculation, with debated facts and contradictory statements. I tried to get in touch with members of Kyle's family, and with his best friend Daniel Scagnelli. There's a Facebook group called Help Find Kyle Fleischman Missing. I submitted a request to join well over a week ago, and still haven't been accepted into the group. The last post there took place on July 20th, and didn't get a lot of responses. On the group page there's an email which they direct you to go to for questions and media inquiries. I wrote an email and sent it, but immediately got the email back, as that address no longer exists. Scagnelli also created a website, helpfindkyle.com, but it also appears to have been disabled. I tried to visit the website multiple times during the course of this episode, and it all resulted in errors stating that the website may either be temporarily down or have moved. But after a week or so of attempts, it appears as though it isn't active anymore. I found a video on YouTube which says it's made by a family member of his, and the first video is dated within days of his disappearance, but I failed to receive any response on there either. It's been nearly 10 years since Kyle vanished, and over that time, the world has continued moving. His family has to move forward with their lives, and though everyone who cared about him still hopes to have an answer someday, they can't dedicate every waking moment of their life to searching for him. Part of the grieving process, which is certainly what the family's going through, is to accept that they may never know the truth, but they can't allow their lives to end because Kyle is gone. He certainly wouldn't have wanted his family to give up their dreams and desires to live in a constant state of depression and sadness over his disappearance. You don't ever forget, but you can't dedicate your entire life to it either. I would imagine this is what happened here, and whether it's part of the healing process or simply the result of not being able to focus on it so sharply anymore, most of that which sprung up in the years after Kyle disappeared has been left behind. Even the Kyle Fleischman Foundation website doesn't exist anymore. Several theories have been developed over the years, some from the family, some from online researchers. It's hard to put a theory together in terms of the official police viewpoint, because it's extremely difficult to know what the police viewpoint is in this case. It's understandable that they would keep details close to them, as it's an ongoing investigation, but to have said almost nothing is hard to comprehend, and must be frustrating to the family. The first theory follows the thought process that Kyle, well-versed in the city of Charlotte, purposefully chose to walk to Cordelia Park because he was looking to get his hands on some drugs. I've known plenty of smart people who've put themselves in terrible situations trying to get some drugs. And in Kyle's case, marijuana is the only drug I can really imagine him pursuing. No one reports Kyle as being a habitual user of any drugs. He has no record for indulging in any kind of drugs and seems to be a drinker, but a social one more than anything else. The baseline for this theory has to be that Kyle willingly entered Cordelia Park. He knew that what was there, and so the logical assumption is that since he knew what went on in that park, there could only be one reason why he would choose to enter it. If the tracking dogs are accurate, then we know that Kyle went to Cordelia Park that night. Tracking dogs can make mistakes or signal false leads. Immediacy is extremely important in terms of the use of tracking dogs. There have been rare cases where a dog has picked up and followed a scent days after a disappearance, but in most cases, you want them to be there as soon as possible. The dogs used in this search were brought in 5 days after Kyle disappeared, and although they appear to have followed a scent, there's no way to know for sure. What makes me lean more towards the possibility that they did have the right scent is that 2 separate dogs were used from beginning to end, and both dogs followed the same path. So this theory would lead us to believe that Kyle entered the park of his own volition in order to purchase some drugs, but there's a lot of flaws here. The main flaw is that Kyle was known to only have $6 on him that night, and he had forgotten his debit card back at the Buckhead. It doesn't make sense that he'd be looking to make a purchase without having the money to cover it. When you factor in the idea that he couldn't afford the purchase and wasn't known to use drugs, that makes this theory extremely unlikely from my point of view. Some have suggested that Kyle, still drunk, didn't know he was so short on cash, and when he went to buy the drugs, the dealer became angry and thought he was trying to rip him off, so he took action and murdered Kyle. This is possible, but again seems unlikely. We know that a private investigator spoke to a homeless man that reported that Kyle had been murdered in the park. But without having a name or background on this individual, it's incredibly hard to corroborate the statement. I'd also like to know if this information was given willingly, or if the homeless man was paid for the information. Some people will say anything for a few bucks. Ultimately, I don't put a lot of weight into the drug theory. Another theory is the one which almost always comes up in cases where adults go missing. Kyle willingly chose to walk out on his life. This does happen, more than you would think, but does it really apply to Kyle in a logical way? He had just found out his mother had cancer, and had sworn to her that they were going to fight it together. He graduated from college, landed a good job, moved into a condo with some roommates, and was seemingly living the life he'd always wanted. This doesn't fit the profile of someone who chooses to walk away. In addition to that, we know he only had $6 on him, and he'd forgotten his debit card at the bar, he left his car at Scagnelli's home, and he'd gone out to a Dane Cook comedy show. If he made the choice to move on, it would have had to have been spur of the moment, because there was absolutely no planning for it. He wasn't in a position where he was equipped to just pick up stakes and move forward. He'd had a few drinks and was walking through the cold Charlotte night without appropriate clothing. This just doesn't spell runaway to me. I think most people, even if they had chosen to leave, not long into the bitter winter night weather, would have decided that it might be best to go home and maybe leave on another day. The biggest indicator to me that Kyle did not make the choice to walk away is that there's been absolutely no activity on his social security number or bank account since the moment he vanished. We live in a much more complex world than the world of 50 years ago. Back then, someone could move to a new town, assume a new identity, and begin again. By 2007, I don't think a 24-year-old kid had the skills or abilities to start anew and somehow acquire a new identity and social security number with which to do that. I know that this is always a theory when someone vanishes, but I don't believe for one second that whatever happened to Kyle that night was by his own choice. Some people have argued that his mother's diagnosis may have traumatized him, and he may have wanted to run away to avoid it. And though this is possible, he seemed to handle it well and was hopeful for the future. Barbara is alive and well today, and if he'd been driven away out of fear, I don't believe he'd still be gone. The police have perpetuated this by arguing that it's been extremely difficult to investigate due to a lack of evidence that any crime was committed. But this is often the point of view taken by law enforcement in these cases. With nothing to investigate, they're limited in their abilities. Regardless, this is the most unlikely theory out there, in my opinion. Another theory is the hit-and-run theory. Much like in my coverage of the Aisha Degree case, I found a lot of information where people suggested that a driver had struck Kyle and taken the body with them to conceal the crime. Kyle was last seen by the taxi driver, assuming this is an accurate sighting, at approximately 3:28 a.m. The theory has two different branches to it, one being that Kyle was struck by a driver, and the other that Kyle was struck by a drunk driver. Bars in North Carolina stop serving alcohol at 2 a.m., and although it's possible, I don't think someone would have hung around for over an hour before deciding to drive home. That doesn't rule out the possibility of someone leaving a party or a friend's house, drunk, and accidentally striking Kyle. Either way, whether you think the driver was drunk or sober, it's certainly possible that Kyle could have been hit. I do think it's strange that someone would hit him and then make the choice to take the body with them. I think most people would simply keep driving, as is often the case with hit and runs. Under the belief that someone did hit him and then loaded his body into the car, there are so many factors here which make it unlikely that no one would ever know about it. There would be damage to the car, likely blood and other evidence in and on the vehicle, as well as people who may have heard the accident or seen a suspicious vehicle in the area. Also, I believe that if someone had struck him, they would have opened their mouth at some point in time. They may have even called someone that night looking for help with the problem. There are definitely people out there who can keep a secret, but more often than not, the more people know something, the harder it is to keep secret. It's hard to know exactly what investigative steps police took, but I'd have to believe they checked for suspicious vehicles in the area and any reports of vehicles damaged in what could have been an accident such as this. Then again, if the person could have known a mechanic or had the damage fixed out of state, it wouldn't have been discovered. The hit and run is certainly a viable theory, though not necessarily the most likely. I do believe that something could have happened this way, but I also think someone would have spoken up by now. Maybe that's just a little naive of me. So that leads us to the most popular theory, even among Kyle's own family, that he was subject to a random act of violence or a robbery gone wrong. It's been well established that Kyle was in a bad area that was populated by drug dealers and gang members. The theory suggests that Kyle, while walking down the street, was approached by one or multiple individuals who either attempted to rob him and things went bad, or that their original intent was murder. Being that they would likely be locals, it wouldn't be surprising that this person or persons would know of some place that they could have taken Kyle to commit the murder where no one would be aware, or where no one would open their mouth if they saw. We know that MS-13 was in the area at the time, and they're well known to be a brutal gang to whom murder is a normal activity. Kyle may have tried to resist, or he may have gone along without a fight, and at some point the decision was made to get rid of him. This brings into question the cell phone pings. I've often wondered if the calls made from Kyle's phone were made to notify someone that he was in danger, but I've also considered the possibility that the calls weren't made by him at all. It's not entirely impossible to assume that someone could have taken his phone and been going through it when they made the calls, whether on purpose or accidentally. The one piece of evidence which makes me question this is that the calls were all made to people close to Kyle, and a stranger wouldn't have known that. However, we don't know for a fact that other calls weren't made. I'd have to assume that police pulled the cell phone records from that night, but again, they've been so tight-lipped about the evidence in this case, there's no way to know for sure. If indeed Kyle was murdered in this way, it isn't beyond comprehension that his body could have been disposed of. The dog handlers strongly believe that he was buried somewhere in the construction site, which today is an apartment complex. Certainly possible, especially considering its proximity to the park. But in North Carolina, there are many other possibilities. Just outside of Charlotte, there are many thinly populated areas and dense forests where it wouldn't be hard to hide a body and have it never be found. In addition to this, there's the Blue Ridge Parkway. Though its proximity to Charlotte isn't exactly right next door, it's an area well rumored to contain a large assortment of buried bodies. A former member of law enforcement that I spoke with told me that if they ever began digging in the areas around the parkway, they would probably be able to solve a large quantity of their missing persons cases. The problem is, there isn't a budget to go on such a hunt, and the landscape of the parkway is unforgiving and difficult to navigate. There have been other theories, such as the idea that Kyle was but one victim in a line of more, but I haven't come across any evidence to support this. There were other crimes committed in the area at that time, and other disappearances with similarities, but nothing solid has ever been developed to connect Kyle to any of those cases. To me, the random act of violence theory is the most likely. I think that Kyle unknowingly walked into something that he couldn't get out of, whether it was a robbery or just some terrible people looking to do something horrible that night. I don't believe that Kyle survived that night. There are people out there who are responsible for whatever happened to him, but whether or not we ever find any answers remains to be seen. It's a sad story that has impacted an entire community. The disappearance of Kyle Fleischman is still talked about in North Carolina, though less and less over the 10 years that have passed. In those years, very little has come to the surface. What happened to Kyle remains a mystery, and while his loved ones have tried to move on with their lives, they still live every day wondering what happened to their son, to their brother, and to their friend. Someone knows what happened that night, and could alleviate so much pain and doubt by coming forward and speaking up. We can only hope that something like this will happen, or that new evidence will be found to provide answers. Maybe someone with an answer is even listening right now. Until then, the disappearance of Kyle Fleischman remains unsolved. If you're interested in finding more information about the disappearance of Kyle Fleischman, there are a few websites and forums where you could find information about the case. If you have any information about the disappearance of Kyle Fleischman, please contact the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police or your local police department. What do you believe happened to Kyle Fleischman that night? Tweet me, at TraceEvPod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, or comment in the Facebook group. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Trace Evidence, and invite you to check out the website at trace-evidence.com. You can find links to the Patreon, all social media accounts, as well as places to download and subscribe to the podcast. I'm always eager to hear your feedback, so if you enjoyed this episode, please give us a good rating on iTunes and leave us a review. This will greatly help our reach and bring more attention to the cases we cover. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence.